You're tuned in to listener-supported community radio KBOO Portland.
You're listening to KBOO Community Radio, and we're in the middle of our end-of-year campaign. Help us meet our $75,000 goal by making a contribution today. KBOO's different hues of independent programming are only possible with your support. Give now at kboo.fm/give. You can also donate by texting KBOO to 44321 or by mailing a check to the station at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, Oregon, 97214. Help shine some light on our radio community by donating now.
When the farmer comes to town with his wagon broken down, the farmer is...
Tune in to The Dirtbag every second Wednesday of the month at 11 a.m.
Learn to grow your tasty fruits and vegetables in your home garden.
There is a monthly garden stumper, calendar of gardening events. You can even call in with your gardening questions.
That's The Dirtbag every second Wednesday, 11 to 12 a.m. That's on KBOO
Portland.
Listen, laugh, learn.
The farmer is the man that feeds them all.
Welcome to The Talking Earth on KBOO Portland. I'm Dan Raphael, your poetry DJ. As usual, we have a trio of long cuts of local poets. The three tonight are John Brehm, Mindy German, and Larry Beckett. I'll also be throwing in some poems by Andrea Gibson and Major Jackson. Let you know we're currently in the middle of KBOO's Cut Through the Clouds end of the year campaign. Most of KBOO's revenues to pay bills and, you know, electricity. There's even some paid staff members comes from our members. Less than 10% of KBOO listeners are paying members. And at this time, special note, any donation you give will be matched by an anonymous angel. So, you know, you give 50 and you're really giving 100 and you can feel twice as beneficial. So please go to the website, kboo.fm, now or any time, and make a contribution. Or would you rather have commercials? So let's start the poetry rolling with John Brehm. John is the author of 4 books of poetry, Sea of Faith, Help is on the Way, No Day at the Beach, and most recently, Dharma Talk. He's also the author of a book of essays, The Dharma of Poetry, you can see a theme here, and the editor of the best-selling anthology, The Poetry of Impermanence, Mindfulness, and Joy, both from Wisdom Publications. He can be found online at John Brehm, and that's B-R-E-H-M, johnbrehmpoet.com. And now let's hear John himself.
Just start whenever. Okay. Okay, I'm going to read some poems from my latest book, Dharma Talk, and I'm just going to start with the first poem, which is called Morning Dilemma. And I like the challenge of writing a poem when there's nothing to really write about, when nothing particularly exciting is happening, or there's nothing emotionally really charged that's asking for expression, but just looking around and noticing what the moment is presenting. And this is a poem of that kind. Morning Dilemma. Awake at 4 this morning. Outside, it's dark and rainy. Nothing's visible beyond a few sketchy trees, a white fluorescent streetlight one block over, like a chunk of moon lodged in winter branches. A day to stay inside and read a novel about almost human robots. Thank God for novelists. Old age would be insupportable without them. Meditate, read novels, write poems now and then, stare out the window, love my wife. That's my plan for growing old, my ambition. A ladybug walked across my desk a few minutes ago. Do they fly around in the cold rain of December? I considered sliding a piece of paper under it, opening the window and flicking it into the outer darkness, like a word flying off a page, but wondered if it might prefer to stay inside where it's warm and dry. And in any case, I would have had to dislodge my cat, and she had one foreleg draped over her eyes, as if the world were already too much to bear, which it is. And while I was struggling with that decision, the ladybug moved itself out of my field of vision, eliminating the problem without solving it. Such was the morning's drama and dilemma. Darkness outside, a visitor from the insect world, isolated sharp light illuminating a chalice of stripped branches, a man with a cat on his lap considering it all. Who's to say we weren't a single being in that moment? A moment of miraculous consciousness, spread across, bestowed upon, arising from, these things I have seen and named and briefly touched with my mind before the day begins. Now, I'll read the next poem in the book, in which my cat also makes an appearance. She kind of wanders in and out of the whole book. This is called Sleep Thief. My wife had the brilliant idea to put jasmine blossoms beside the bed to help carry me off to sleep and keep me there all night long. Sleep, blessed sleep, like the elegant doe you catch sight of in the forest, and then it bounds away. But in the night, my cat ate my wife's brilliant idea and stepped right over my spinning head and curled herself into a black spiral of unimpeded slumber and thought nothing of it. Cats have no conscience. I'll read the next poem in the book, also kind of an insomnia poem. It's called Wishful Thinking. I wish I could lift my brain from my skull, rest it in a bowl of cool water, watch the steam rise, listen to it sizzle, the poor, reckless, overheated thing, always worrying, always wanting. I would bathe it in sea salt and lavender, rose oil and eucalyptus, cradle it against my chest like a child, this thing crafted and crazed by 5 million years of fear, the lions that stalked us on the African savannas now internalized. In its place would be a space where nothing could happen, an attic room with pitched ceilings and dormer windows looking out on falling snow, elm trees etched into a metallic winter sky, absolute silence. A dream house, warm enclosure and cold clarity sailing into the wind, no one at the helm. This next poem is called Wanting, Not Wanting. I wish I didn't want things to be other than they are, but wanting to be someone who doesn't want things to be other than they are is just another way of wanting things to be other than they are, and I don't want that. The next poem is the title poem of the book. It's called Dharma Talk. And a Dharma talk is, as I'm sure most of the listeners know, is the sort of Buddhist version of a sermon, although much less formal and typically done after a period of meditation, but on some aspect of the Buddhist teachings. Dharma talk. He said, changing nothing changes everything, which, if you change the words around, also suggests that changing everything changes nothing, which further implies that nothing and everything are interchangeable, are in fact the same thing, or the same non-thing, having no fixed, unchanging nature, or a nature that is in constant change, if change can be said to be constant, and is therefore a kind of emptiness about which it is better to speak only in the negative of what it is not, or not to speak at all. So this is a very small book, and most of the poems in it are quite short, and many of the poems are about emptiness, they're about nothingness, they're about non-doing, not speaking. There's a sort of negative quality in the sense of the via negativa, the negative way, the idea that you can only approach an ultimate truth or God or the divine, not through positive assertions, but by clearing away false assumptions, by making negative statements about what God is not rather than what God is. And so there's a lot of poems of that kind in the book. So its smallness and the smallness of the poems are reflective of that that perspective. And this poem is called Vanishing Act. I want what I say to be next to nothing. I mean right next to nothing, rubbing its skinny shoulders against infinite white abyss. And many of the poems are quite thin, and so there's a lot of white space around them. And this next poem is a poem of that kind, although less abstract, more observational. It's called Steady Going. Her cane like a question mark troubling the sidewalk until she comes to a full stop before the curb and trembles looking out across the crossing, a dark blue brace from knee to ankle. But her white-haired daughter curves a hand on her low back to steady her, a gesture of such exquisite comfort, encouragement, direction. I feel it even here. It holds me up. I also thought a lot about the sequence of the poems in the book, how they kind of flow together and fit together. And this next poem is a kind of a companion poem to the one I just read. It's called Flight Path. Steadiness is a virtue, yes, but unsteadiness also has its uses. The butterfly's wobbly flight, for example, which is its only defense against predators, like my cat, who leaps and swipes and misses, unable to track its jagged trajectory. How did nature know to embody such perfectly calibrated imperfections in this dreamy creature Xuanzi dreamt of, or was dreamt up by, so long ago, and which I, possibly also my cat, am dreaming of now? There's a famous story that Xuanzi, who's a younger contemporary of Lao Tzu, tells, where he dreamt that he was a butterfly, very convincing dream. And when he woke up, he was confused and asked himself, you know, was I, Xuanzi, dreaming that I was a butterfly? Or am I now a butterfly dreaming that I am Xuanzi? So that's what that reference is about there. All right, I'm going to read a couple longer poems now. This one's called Metta, and M-E-T-T-A. And Metta is a Buddhist practice of sending loving kindness to others. Metta. The book I'm reading suggests we send loving kindness to everyone we see, silently addressing them thus. May you be well, may you be safe, may you be happy. And I do this for a while, sitting inside a cafe, watching the foot traffic go by. It feels good, generous, loving, kind. But after a time, I start modifying the blessing. May you be well, may you be safe, may you be happy, and maybe also lose the frowning into the phone facial expression I get so tired of seeing everywhere I go. It's the shadow side of loving kindness, sticking its nose in, having its say. And I can't seem to shut it up. Someone else walks by and I offer, may you be well, may you be safe, may you be happy, and while you're at it, how about some nicer clothes? It wouldn't kill you to dress with a bit more panache, would it? I keep on in this way, dishing out blessings with a side of helpful advice, until I notice across the room two young women sitting side by side, talking quietly, in no need of either my good wishes or my corrective commentary. But then I see that one of them is crying, nodding her head when her friend says something, wiping tears from her cheeks with the palms of her hands. She pulls it together for a while, but then her face clenches and she gives in until her friend lays a hand on her shoulder and she can talk again, a gentle rhythm of crying and talking, waves rising and falling. It doesn't look like she's been visited by tragedy, a sudden death or shattering diagnosis. Ordinary heartbreak would be my guess, the shock of betrayal, some painful reversal in the endless cycle of loss and gain, and now a new emptiness spreads out before her and she doesn't know what to do. But what kills me is when she tucks her hair behind her ear and tries not to cry and fails, overcome by this sadness, so that I feel it too. A great swell lifts and carries me and almost pulls me under. And then I'm in the thick of it, wishing her to be well, to be safe, to be happy, as if my life depended on it. And in the middle section of this book, I have a sequence of 12 haiku, and I'm going to read these now. Cold spring morning, close the window or listen to the warbler. Not so different, veined spring leaf and my ancient hand. Feet hurt, back hurts, head hurts. Balanced, at least. Coming unstitched, even the fake flowers grow old. I put my glasses on to see the fog more clearly. Scattered crocuses as if someone had planted birdsong. 50 years ago, seeds. Before that, nothing. Oak trees outside my window. The pain is still there, weeping willow my father cut down. Lost in a fantasy, the framed kanji for compassion falls to the floor. Regretting something I said, I turn the lampshade to hide the seam. Sleepless night, Buddha unbothered on the altar. Gently with an upturned broom, guiding the hummingbird out the window. One more minute. All right, I'll read one more poem. This is called Something and Nothing. There's something to be said for having nothing to say, though I don't know what that is or isn't, just as there's something to be known about not knowing, which I would tell you if I could. There must be something to be gained by losing, a seed of victory buried in every failure, else I would not be here. Clearly, there's something to be desired about being beyond desire, as the sages never tire of telling us. And nothing more fulfilling than emptying yourself out. No ground beneath your feet, nothing to hold on to, no handrail, no belief, only this bright self-sustaining air and a falling that feels like floating. Dudley Ball. In third grade, only two kids got chased around the playground. One was a shaggy-haired boy, I think his name was Peter, who miraculously appeared in Lincoln, Nebraska, from England in 1963, trailing clouds of Beatlemania. I watched in helpless amazement as the girls squealed and took off after him at every recess. Hard to imagine what they would have done had they caught him, held him down and kissed him, torn him limb from limb like the maenads in Ovid. The other was Dudley Ball, whose yellowish face and bloodshot eyes I now know indicated jaundice and liver disease, but at the time signified only strangeness, laughable ugliness, untouchable difference from the rest of us. The other boys chased him, threw kickballs at him, thrilled they could zing a ball at a weird kid named Dudley Ball. Hey, Dudley, have a ball. Dudley Ball, what a dud. The red hair and freckles, puffy cheeks and constant perspiration amplified his otherness. No one spoke to him. But why do I see his face so clearly now, the fear and loneliness in his eyes? The faces of all the others I've forgotten. I was outraged at the injustice of it, the cruelty of the schoolyard taunts. I told the teacher, but can't recall if she did anything about it. And then he stopped coming to school. A few months later, we learned he had died. I wish now I'd said a kind word to him, tried harder to protect him. I had my own strangenesses, though mine were mostly invisible. I wish I'd put my arm around his shoulder, asked him to eat his lunch with me. We could have watched together the screeching girls, their mad pursuit, and marveled at the vagaries of luck and circumstance that exalt some and cast down others, dealing out adoration and ridicule in unequal measure. We wouldn't have talked that way back then, of course. More likely, we would have sat in awkward silence or talked about what we wanted to be when we grew up, or maybe compared our cowlicks. I remember now how alike ours were, a cresting ocean wave on the right side of our foreheads, as though we'd each been licked by the same thick-tongued cow, a calm old cow who saw all our fears and flaws and loved us just the same.
Thanks, John. And now I'll read you a couple poems from You Better Be Lightning by Andrea Gibson. To whom it definitely concerns. Please accept this letter as formal notification that I am resigning from the position of my own worst enemy. I've appreciated the opportunity to lower my standards so far they could win a limbo contest against the crumb. I've been honored to serve as a server at the banquet where I eat myself alive. The day I was hired, I could never have imagined how many Employee of the Month plaques I'd acquire from breaking the standing record for standing in my own way. In this position, I've grown continuously, like bacteria in a staph infection. I had no idea that holding myself back would be contagious. I would like to have a different kind of impact on the future company I keep. The scene I made during our last team-building exercise woke me to the need for a change. I know the young people in the office are still shaken by my refusal to catch myself in the trust fall. I apologize for that gory display. Moving forward, I'll be pursuing opportunities in another field, preferably one where break rooms are for resting and not for breaking promises to the person I hope to become. I fully intend to replace whatever dreams I shattered when I was beating myself up. I have no idea where I learned punching in was a literal term. If I had known better, I would have called in sick in the head. I accept this position initially because I believed it came with the very best insurance plan. How could I fall to my death from the ground floor? Over the years, however, I've gotten increasingly familiar with the fine print of the benefits. Turns out, there are no benefits when the copay is your life. I understand it's customary to give 2 weeks' notice, but I've only got 2 minutes. And in those minutes, I will fire my inner critic, or at least demote it to part-time. 2, assure my passions have the tools they need to unionize with my actions. 3, sit naked on the photocopy machine so there are 100 copies of my ass to kiss when I'm gone. Though I suspect it won't bode well for acquiring a positive referral letter, it's important to state that I'm unwilling to train a replacement in this position. It is my suggestion that the job be eliminated altogether and that no future person take on this task. If I can aid in the transition, please let me know. Sincerely. Every time I said I want to die, I meant I am willing to do anything to live, even leave this world forever. Even build a new home atop a nebula, stick a straw into a buried lake on Mars, get tipsy on anti-gravity and invent new constellations, walking the line between undiscovered stars. When God pulls me over and asks, "Can you touch your nose?" I could say, "What nose?" I'd be bodiless, a shadow in reverse, a patch of light made by the darkness I escaped. The psychology manuals say no one really wants to die. They want relief. They believe they will never find it in this world. That belief could be right. Or wrong. One would have to stay to find out. Friend, if you stay, at least we will be together, and I have an extra straw. I could show you where the lakes on this planet are buried, how you do not need light years to reach them. The dark years work, too. Sometimes better. Sometimes grief is the fastest route to truth. In addition to the straw, I also have a slingshot that fires rock bottoms directly at the sun until change spills from its golden pockets. That's how I got my hands on this summer afternoon. We can do anything with it, sunbathe or scream or forgive ourselves, everything, most especially the thread we could not convince to close our wounds. If your wounds are still open, trust they are doors to an answer and walk through. What if we don't have to be healed to be whole? There are holes in every inch of the fabric that makes me who I am, but pull the string on my back and I'll say, "I love you," and mean it whenever you want. Come flood my home with your eyes. I read that people scream when they are in pain because screaming actually lessens the pain. Anyone who asks you to hold your tongue is asking you to hold the heaviest thing in the galaxy. Forget them. And remember, you can tell me anything about how hard it is to stop flirting with your expiration date. I understand being wooed by the finish line of sadness. Infinity still sends me nudes every day. I won't deny she looks amazing, but I'm taken. My hand now promised to writing every page of my story except its end. Friend, you are who taught me that a difficult life is not less worth living than a gentle one. Joy is much easier to carry than sorrow, and you could lift a city from how long you've been holding what's been nearly impossible to hold. This world needs those who know how to do that. Those who can find a tunnel with no light at the end of it and hold it up like a telescope to show that the darkness contains many truths that can bring the light to its knees. Grief astronomer, adjust the lens, look close, tell me what you see. And that's Andrea Gibson. Now to my next featured poet, Mimi German. Mimi German was recently named Oregon's first Beat Poet Laureate. She has written two volumes of poetry, Beneath the Gravel Weight of Stars, published by The Poetry Box, and her current book, Where Grasses Bend, published by I Publish You, spelled different. She resides in Portland and in the wilderness of Steens Mountain. She's currently working on a new collection titled War Poems. Here's Mimi German.
Where grasses bend. As they count the dead, in the shadows of a New York hospital, rows of refrigerated trucks squeeze side by side like rotting lemons to shelve the dead. Dawn enters on outstretched wings, her feathered light casting ribbons of marmalade plums and overripe cherries across the sky. Seagulls cry as they open the curtains, drawing in the day. Dusk. Outside my window, the rain drops hard, clacks the earth like worry beads. Priestly trees sway like a thousand rabbis at the wall, but nothing wails except the wind. Prayers fold and tuck into origami prisms, float like kites toward the sky. I wonder who is left to do the bidding, to mind the castle when there is no one left. Resembling a dead weed. I'm losing all my leaves. Soon I will resemble a dead weed. It appears that spring is here, and yet, and yet, and yet, earth is dry, thirsty, annihilative, and death is airborne. My thoughts refuse order, and meaning is a lost dog. I taste the soil from my fingers to remember where I am and who is the dawn. A swing scrapes the air in a neighbor's yard. Crow is my shadow, like bruised fruit to the orchard's floor. Even if I asked, you cannot walk the cracks of this wadi with me. Adrift. How quickly the tide pushes us farther and farther from any shore. Where once a jackal walked. I remember things from this distance, like that my wild is your spirit animal. I pace the jagged miles, sniffing each leaf, scratching the earth for any scent of life, of love, for the path beyond these thistles that leads me through a thicket of darkness and over crags of this monumental divide. Longing screeches through empty canyons where once a jackal walked, where once a vulture swooped through the red veins of the valley under the gaze of yellow asters. The path curves, winding upstream in the white waters rafting across my body. I rough the edges smooth, then winnow soil from clay. I defy drought by thirsting on rays of the sun. But I cannot, in all my wildness, find my way into you where I belonged. hope. What is hope in a plague? To live, to die, to skirt the ragged crags of vacancy and rusted tin can fires. I walk through yesterday's in rain, with hands unclasped, eyes fixed to an unmarked trail. I surrender to the caravan and the orchid of fruit trees, to all the green steeples, to living, to death, to descent, to the bloom and the blossom of things. To your moan, I surrender, to the thresholds and to the cliffs, to the river's rushing waters, to the boulders that tumble and break at my feet. I surrender, beholden to no one but the earth herself. I lick from the leaf besotted with rain to remember my name and the crazy that bends in torrents in my head to the torment of longing. I surrender to the shining star sun and to Jupiter's moons, to the glorious cold of the dark desert night, to the cracks in the ceiling and the holes in the floor, to kindness, to scarcity, to the givers, to takers, and to love. Oh, to love. And then, dear listeners, a poem titled Of Love. The weight of love is a stone bedded down beneath layers of wet brown earth. Tend to it with blankets from winter's last leaves. Feed it snowberries and the soft decay of time. Indulge it with the ghostly dance of darkness in the erotic night. Love tangles in the pines, in the sap of bones and the salty bitters of clarity. Caress its ice storms with honeyed breath. Charm it like a snake slipping deeper into marshes. Undress its nakedness with your teeth. Braid it into plaits and weave them into your bed. But do not plead with it to stay. A thousand grains of sand. America, the dominatrix, empire of a thousand grains of sand, whose masters ink in the high heels of war horrors, whose circle jerk at the feast of landlords while spilling slop bucket prayers to the poor. America, how necrotic your soul. Your poets cringe in the wake of your obscenities, your rotted stench of henchmen, pillagers of lands once verdant and alive. Your orchards of poverty grow seeds of death. America, the illiterate, puritanical and unsavory, you were never ready to leave home. And into more of part two of this book, Night. Night is the stoned moan of poverty and the song of a thousand frogs. It is an efficiency apartment for a fleeting dream, a star bordello where a dark angel rides a gazelle. Night is the owl measuring the distance between here to there. Night is wilderness collecting its thoughts. Darkness, the weight of a fugue, carousel of morning, and the delivery truck of day. And we're into part three of Where Grasses Bend. Wilderness. They say nothing is out here. That here is the middle of nowhere. But here, exactly here, you find your where. On earth, your who you are. You're you. You are whole here, where time is the existence of a sun and a lizard who tells you that living is just luck. This poem is called Spring on Steen's Mountain. In the afterbirth of winter, We rejoice at last and open the windows wide to breathe a deeper breath of sky. Winter's paper grasses turn to fertile stalks of green. Snow still clings to mountain crags and peaks. The songs of coyotes fold fields to clouds, and on the open slope of thighs, spring rides in unbridled. Velvet auburn robes swathe the newborn fawns. Wildflowers and balsa root shake their blossoms loose to remind us what it is to earth ourselves in such tambourine divinity. Red-winged blackbirds sweep the tongue of sagebrush fields. Rabbit peeks from his namesake brush. We drink the running waters in pronghorn country. This is titled Blue Wilderness. Like the last person alive, she yearns for the last peony in a drunken field of wildflowers. Clouds graze on raven-scented air, aware of darkness colluding with light, assembling the appendage of dawn. But morning patina billows blue, desert blue, lonesome blue, shadow silhouette, mountainside's root. Unweathered rock, late autumn heaves and tumbles across the stutter. Exhausted grasses, wet from a moonless rain, fold toward winter's coming, where only truths grow acres long. Where grasses bend. Winter winds blow down from the pueblos. Gales of snow encircle the house, like ghosts, hungry, pressing their urgency against these mortared walls. Inside, I write poetry, warm, beside the stove. Sacred, the desert tree. Across from the old schoolhouse, we stood in a graveyard of trees. I could hear the death rattle of falling ancient elms, a thunder that breaks humans from their gods. Surrounding the desert, high above the playa, the mountain sheep bray on rim rock, delirious and unhinged from summer's dry bones. Coyote slumbers, scarred earth hardens. A dream reflects in a jackrabbit's eye. Sounds of water taste like rock. These things are sacred too. Lone juniper stands beneath scorching sun, a sentinel. Shadows of the fallen whisper, faltering into night, witness divinity, tilling the dark of dawn. Bathe unmarked, naked in the soft tongue of sagebrush, her scent wet with waking. Holy is the conjurer of life, purveyor of death, inside the wooden wheel on the worn and rugged path, and holy this earth, rivulets of blue, of red, of wine, in this silence of the desert, where dead trees lie. Spring lifts its winter skirts. Everything is heard. The rancher speaks in moons, and stars graze in desert sands. Holy is the wild, no longer that of man, but of love, of poets and wanderers, riders of unsaddled horses. Holy, holy, holy be their names. A bouquet of bones thrust into the stumble, waking us into the infancy of day.
Okay, thanks, Mimi. Since time's getting kind of slippery with air, or at least it did last time, I'm just going to plug in the third featured poet right now and maybe have time to read some poems by somebody else. But you never know with time. So now you're going to hear from Larry Beckett. His poetry ranges from songs, songs to the siren, to blank sonnets, songs and sonnets, to the epic American cycle, including Paul Bunyan, Wyatt Earp, Amelia Earhart, and seven other book-length poems. Beat Poetry is a study of the poets and poetry of the 50s, San Francisco Renaissance. So here's Larry Beckett reading from the Book of Merlin.
I'm Larry Beckett, and I'm reading from the Book of Merlin. The actual Merlin was a 6th-century poet in northwest Britain who spoke the Brythonic tongue. He was known as Merdin Wyllt, or Merlin of the Wild. It was long thought that only a handful of his poems were left in the Black Book of Carmarthen, the Red Book of Hergest, and other old Welsh manuscripts. But scholars have suggested that Merlin's other lyrics were embedded in the Latin poem Vita Merlini, The Life of Merlin, by Geoffrey of Monmouth. Together, they tell of the Battle of Arthuried and Merlin's trauma there and his vanishing into the woods of Celyddon, where he became a poet and prophet. My translation is the first time that his surviving words have been gathered in one manuscript since the Book of Merlin was lost in the 12th century. Green warriors, can doom so hard, so harm me by spiriting away all my companions, who made kings and far kingdoms shake? We are uncertainty. Death is always here, and it's in power to strike with its secret blade, blow poor life out of the body. Green warriors, who will stand by me in arms, stave off the commanders coming to hurt me and the armies rising against me? You were brave, and that bravery has spirited away all your sweet years, your youth. Oh, only now you were charging in armor and cutting all of your enemies down. And now you lie light on the earth. It's reddening. To the apple tree. Dear apple tree, your branches delight, luxuriant, shooting the fruit my fame. I prophesy to the chieftain of Machrau in Macavi, a Wednesday of blood and joy to Schloger and its red blades. Hello, holy shoat! Thursday is coming, and the Cymry will rejoice in battle, defending Cymmenod with swordplay, and the Saxons slaughtered by spears of ash, and their heads as kickballs. I prophesy truth. I see a child rising out of a shire in the faraway south. Dear apple tree, luxuriant and green, your branches big, your shape lovely, I prophesy tumult and a frightening battle at Pingern. Men with mead near Cymmenod, he hacks them down. Eriri, commander, only hates left. Dear apple tree, now golden, growing at Telarth, no garden around you. I prophesy a battle in Great Prydain, defending frontiers against Dubliners. In 7 ships across the wide waters, the 700 come to conquer. Of those that come, only 7 will go back, half empty, as it's foretold. Dear apple tree, luxuriant, growing, I once found my food at your foot because of a girl when, with shield on shoulder, sword on thigh, I slept all alone in the woods of Celadon. Hello, Shoat. My words are birds. Kings from over the seas will come Monday, blessing the Kimri, strong. Dear apple tree in the clearing with power to hide me from Riddurch and his captains, crowding around it, his army around it, and I am invisible. Quinthith, with no love or welcome for me. Gwasag, his ally, with hate for me. I ruined her son, his daughter. Death comes to all, but why not me? After Gwenthalau, no king honors me. Nothing amuses me. No lovely girl visits me. In the Battle of Arthurid, my regalia was gold, and now I am despised by the swan white woman. Dear apple tree, with tender blossoms, growing in secret in the green wood, at daybreak, I heard the story that Gwasag was offended by my words 1, 2, 3 times in a day. Ah, God, if only my end had come before his blood, her son, was on my hands. Dear apple tree by the water, no servant can eat your wonder. When I had my reason, I'd lie at your foot with a sensual girl, so slim. 50 years at the whim of outlaws, I've wandered with ghosts, no money, no minstrels. So long they can't distract me. Now I can't sleep. Shake for my King Gwendolyn, all my kin. I'm sick and sad in Celadon. At the last end, may I go free. Dear apple tree, with tender blossoms, out of the soil of the uneven woods, the muse has foretold a story that a rod of gold for bravery will be given by glorious horse kings to the man of grace over the heathen. For the shining child, bold, Saxons will fall, and the bards will flourish. Dear apple tree, red blossom tree, alive in hiding in Celadon wood, they're looking for your fruit in vain, till Cadwallader comes from meeting Cadvan, by the Tui shore, the river Tewi, anguish out of Erinwinian, and the wild-haired men are tamed, comes from meeting at Ridrion, Kinnan out front, against the Saxons, the Cymry will win, led by splendor. All get their rights, the Brython's joy, and the horn's sound. That music, peace. To the wandering stars, in the wild wood and back, I am a beast. I live on grass, in snow, in rain, the cruel wind. But this is better than administering laws in towns and ruling over hawks. Night and the horns of the moon luminous, all the lights of heaven shimmering, and the air so clear as the north wind has blown away the clouds and withered the mists with its dry breath and left the sky at peace. I watch the planets make their circles up on this high hill. What is that ray from you, Mars? Does raw red mean a king is dead and another's come? I see it's so. Constantine's died, his kin Conan, by a bad chance, has murdered his uncle and taken the crown, is king. High Venus, you sail on your way under the zodiac and by the sun. What is that double ray that cuts across the air? And does that split foretell the severing of my love? I see it's so. And we are divided. I'm gone, and she's abandoned me for another man, and love's lying in his arms. I lose her, and he wins. I wander, and I've lost my rights to him who's near her skin. I am not jealous, so let her marry now it's ripe. Cherish him. Tomorrow I'll go take her the gift I promised. I decline. You are young, but at my time of life, I can't be asked to take the scepter up and to be fair. I'm in old age. It has my body and slacks my strength. I can barely walk across the fields. I have lived long and enough. Enjoy. In abundance, smiling. In these woods there is an oak, old and rugged, and so wasted its sap's failing and is rotting. I saw the acorn as it first fell, and saw it sprout, woodpecker above it on a branch. I saw it in detail. I honored it. I marked in memory the place it stands. I have lived long. Age is heavy. I will not reign again. I'll stay, green leaves. Celadon wood is my delight. More than corn of Sicily, grapes of Memphis, robes in the perfumes of Tyre, rubies of India, gold of Tagus, tall towers or cities in walls. Nothing can touch me so or lure me away from the green woods, so dear to me as always. I'll stay while I'm alive, with its grasses and its apples. I'll fast and purify till I'm worthy of everlasting life. Look up. The cranes are flying in lines, in letters of the alphabet.
Thanks, Larry. And if you enjoy Larry's work, you'll probably be reading different work when he reads at Annie Bloom's Books on January 16th. And he'll be reading with Mark Zergin, a poet from San Francisco. And Mark will be reading on Talking Earth January 15th, the day before the reading at Annie Bloom's. So there's a kind of synergy going on here. Let me see if I can sneak in a quick poem from Major Jackson, his recent book, Razzle Dazzle. Going into battle. The birthmark on the lower right of my wife's back is a letter of resurrection. Each night I kiss it before I turn out the light so that it blesses my sleep. A stamp of all her sorrows, I regard it with the utmost importance, for it sets her apart from all other creatures. Sometimes I put my face to its amoeba-like shape to see if I can hear the long wail of her creation. Periodically it guides me across the waters of my absent desire like a beacon, only brown and lightly spotted. One before saw it as a sign of war and created a sentinel around his body, and he who beheld it next heard the rattling of dice in a gambler's hand. I am the only one who makes peace before facing the large screen of dreams, knowing a wind-cursed city lies behind my eyelids. And that's Major Jackson. I'm Dan Raphael. This is the Talking Earth. This is the, I believe, the second longest going radio poetry program in America. I do want you to remember, this is KBOO's end of the year fun campaign. It's called Cut Through the Clouds, because we want to keep doing that through the airwaves, over the internet, or your computer, whatever it takes to reach you, we want to, and we want you to help us, because you know, some things do have to be paid for. Again, we're all pretty much all volunteer. No commercials, as you might notice. I won't tell you what I'm selling on the side. And currently, if you do send some money in, KBOO.FM, it'll be doubled. So, you know, you can contribute 50 and feel like you've given 100, because in a way you have. And that's nice. We thank you very much for that. Again, a lot of thanks here. Thanks to all of you listening to this, to all who have already contributed to KBOO. Thanks to Talking Earth founders Barbara LaMorticella and Walt Curtis, and to producer, engineer, and host Patrick Picard. Thanks to everyone who's listening here. And thanks to all the supporters of poetry. And there's a short poem by myself, Dan Raphael, Rapture. I wondered why so many empty parking spaces, then looked up and saw the lid of the sky had been removed, thousands of bodies gushing upwards. Most of the homeless were gone. Most of the small business owners were trying to find staff. I paid the meter, as certainly the police were still here. I tried to call home, but a cloud of cell phones and forced silence. Maybe the pawn shop with used guitars and guns is open. We have inherited the earth. Not all of us are meek. And so have a good holiday season. Don't be meek, but do be human, compassionate, joyous, all that. A new year's coming, all kind of shadows over there, whether it's the ecology, whether it's delirium tremens, whether it's your own personal difficulties or the difficulties of friends and neighbors. It's going to be a politically crazy year here nationwide, but also in Portland, getting a new city government and all that. So stay tuned and read and listen to as much poetry as possible. Bye.
KBOO, Portland.
KBOO's end of year campaign is happening right now. We invite you to donate and become a member today. We have the full spectrum of ways to join. Go to kboo.fm/give or by texting KBOO to the number 44321. You can also mail a check to the station at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. Cut through the clouds and make it rain to help us meet our $75,000 goal by December 31st.
Here goes nothing.
Tune in to KBOO for Drinking from Puddles, hosted by Brandon.